The poem I thought I would read tonight is a little bit longer than normal. And it's by Semeda. And her Semeda stands for great wisdom. So this is what I thought I would start our sit with, given that we are going to talk about becoming. Semeda says, I was wearing a new white dress on the morning I first heard the Dhamma. Something was calling, but I couldn't quite make it out. I started spending more and more time alone in my room. One morning over breakfast, my mother asked me what was going on. So I told her, the Buddhist path isn't easy to follow, my mother said, especially for someone accustomed to getting whatever she wants. Marry the good king Anakadada. Marry the good king Anakadada. Enjoy all the things young ladies enjoy. Dressing up, being waited on, and going to expensive parties like weddings. Today, you want to dress this body up and sell it at a wedding, I told her. But soon enough, they'll be selling it to the graveyard for nothing. We are cows chasing the axe. We are soft flesh chasing the cobra's fang. We are dry straw chasing the torch. We are lovers chasing our own reflections. Mother, we are walking food. The vultures circle, we lie down, and the feast begins. My parents watched as I took a long, sharp knife and cut off my long black hair. Just then, the king, Anakadata, walked in. He looked at me, blade in one hand, and a couple of feet of hair in the other. Then he smiled. With your hair cut short, Semeda, you look even more beautiful. Soon, all the women in our kingdom will be cutting their hair just like yours. Come, my love, the whole world is chasing happiness. You and I will be among the lucky few who win the race. Good king, I said. If we spend our lives running after the things of the world, we will die and keep right on running. Stealing the things we mean to earn, setting fire to the things we mean to protect, drowning the people we mean to love, and turning into enemies those most like ourselves. I threw my hair to the ground. Anakadata knelt down, picking up a few strands and let them fall. He stood there and turned to my parents. You who would have been my mother, you who would have been my father, let Semeda go. May she find the path, and may she one day return and show us all the way home. It's getting dark now, my sisters. The sun's going down, and soon we'll all be going our separate ways. Can we sit here together just a little while longer, not saying anything at all? The path will go on rising and falling like a song, and in the end, you will find yourself as one lost at sea finds herself finally washed ashore. Listen. Can you hear that? The sound of the wind of the leaves like a wave coming on. Go on. Shake up the world. Set yourself free. That is the great wisdom of Semeda. So maybe we can sit with that.
so on. Shake out the world. Set yourself free.
It's good that all of us are kind of old friends here. Old connected Sangha, because sometimes there are things in the Dhamma that seem to strike me in a different way. I don't know. I hear other people talk about it and it sounds one way, but when I actually start practicing with it and feeling into it, it doesn't come across quite as, it doesn't come across quite as linear. It comes across more as an experience. And it's hard to articulate an experience. And that's what I think becoming is. Becoming, to me, is more of basically an experience that we experience, and trying to articulate that without putting too much rigidity in it is what I think is the most difficult part about talking about becoming. But I think, I'm hoping that the way I talk about it tonight, and we can make it even more clear next week if we need to, but the way I want to talk about it tonight in this natural way, I'm hoping will give us an experience about what it is that's happening when we move into this becoming phase of the dependent origination cycle. So let's just start where we are here. And it doesn't take much. Doesn't matter who you talk to, everybody around us will tell you we are in difficult times. It just seems like that's all we talk about is, oh my God, how difficult the times are. But in reality, this is not the first time we've been in any difficulty, and it certainly will not be the last time we're in any level of difficulty. I think there's a common reason why this feels particularly difficult. At any time where there's the degree of uncertainty, the degree of unfamiliarity, and the degree of this kind of unknown mystery that's happening around us at this level, brings with it in our minds a sense that something is difficult. That's why we decide that this is difficult times. It's as if whenever we notice this kind, we feel this kind of uncertainty or unfamiliar, unknown territory, our natural thinking mind goes into threat mode and it begins to try to create some stability in what feels like an unstable situation. That stability can come from thinking a lot about times that were better, were where it should be, the way it should be. We think on all of a sudden, you know, a few years ago was perfect. It was just the best world ever because this world is so bad. Or it tries to somehow correct the wrong that's here and push us into thinking about how we need to correct this wrong or fill in the gap some way. And our minds begin to get flooded, is what it's called, with the mind's thinking process on writing, making things right, making things stable, bringing things into alignment where it is. Basically, what I consider this to be is the mind trying to reestablish its control. And as long as our thinking mind, we have a sense that there is control here, that's where we think our stability lies. And if you remember when we were talking about, it's either craving or clinging, and we were talking about this habitual way of being, that is where we think the control is. It's well, we think it's in the experience, but actually there is no control in experience. Everything is always changing and rearranging and subject to some kind of movement. So the habit begins to be the thing that we put as a sense of control. And habitually, we start falling into these patterns somehow to try to shake things up and make it right. But to me, this is the perfect time to be talking about dependent origination. It's the perfect time to be talking about how becoming comes into being. Because if we're in places of stability and everything seems smooth and together, we have no interest in trying to upset the apple cart. Let's just keep it going. We'll work on that later. Or we kind of half fake look at it in a way, kind of like, oh yeah, I'm going to look into this becoming. But really the becoming is okay. We kind of skip over it. So I'm hoping that talking about becoming tonight, we could begin to see what it is that we're doing, where we are on this cyclical path here. Because I think becoming is the habitual movement that we are doing. That movement into habit is what I think the becoming actually is. I want to talk a little bit about the relationship of where we've left and how we've come into this becoming, and that movement is going to take us deeper into this suffering. So another way to think about it is, up until this point, we've been talking about the processes that lead to suffering. All those earlier links are these links that are coming together to create suffering. And we've been talking about it over the course of 9 months. So it might feel like it's long and drawn out, but it's not. Actually, it's how quick it is. But we stretch it out to try to see it. But this is the movement into selfing. Becoming is movement, and it's movement into this sense of suffering, the end results that's going to lead us into suffering. So I'm hoping I can can talk about it in such a way that it feels like it's moving. We can feel that sense of moving. So I have some ways of talking about it that I think it'll help bring the movement in it. Because we were talking about craving when I first started this, like 3 months that I've been teaching, and I came into this in craving and all of the unpleasantness that's connected to craving and this earnest way that I was trying to point, stay in that discomfort with the craving, stay in that discomfort with the craving, because we might think that is suffering. This is the Four Noble Truths. So I'm going to step out here on a ledge that I'm not, this is what I experience in practice, but I'm stepping out here on a ledge because I'm not sure that all teachers, like I didn't run it past Philip to see if he would agree with it the way I'm going to describe it, but I'm going to describe it like this. That suffering of craving is not the suffering that the Buddha was pointing to in the Four Noble Truths. Because in that suffering of craving, it's a felt sense body experience. It's a real felt sense of wanting. You can feel that wanting, and that wanting is not illusory. You can feel it. You can tell that you are in craving because you can feel the tension of not wanting and wanting. So to me, I want to first mention what I think of as three tensions and the tensions we're trying to deal with here. The first tension that we deal with in life is the tension of basic life. It's the tension that happens because we live in a world with the three characteristics, and we live in a human realm where everything is subject to change. It's impermanent, subject to change. So it's going to be dissatisfying, and we can't grab a hold of it and control it. And so there's always going to be that non-personal effect on us. It's always impermanent, subject to change, and it's not personal. This is natural. This is life. It doesn't matter how much you love summer, it's going to go. It doesn't matter how much you hate winter, it's going to come. It doesn't have anything to do with whether you like being warm, you're still going to be cold. It doesn't matter if you like it when the body feels really easy and everything is working and the tummy's right and the tummy's going to get disrupted. It's just, there's no way to control the natural flow of what happens. We know that. That's a level of tension that exists with us all the time. There's a second layer of tension we deal with, and that layer of tension is what I would call reactivity. This is reacting to everything that happens that we like and we don't like, this constant reactivity. That reactivity is where we cause the most harm, but I think that's where craving and clinging are. The first part of the cycle of dependent origination involves that initial kind of natural suffering, but we are in ignorance and we don't see it. So we don't see it and we don't really come into it until we have a reactivity to something that's happening in the moment. This reactivity is what I think the second layer of tension is. But the layer of tension that I think the Buddha was pointing to is the next layer of tension. Because the next layer of tension is mental. It's what happens to us when our reactivity either doesn't work or gets thwarted in some way, we get stuck, or it works and we just think this is the way it should always be and start spinning in it again. It's the mental aspect that happens So this example I gave to my Inside Dialogue class to try to explain what this would look like is imagine that you're standing there in front of a glassy pond. It's just pristine in its stillness. And you're just sitting there enjoying it. Like at IMS, you've walked all the way around the loop. You've got to the pond and here it is. It's glassy. It's beautiful. Fall day. And a leaf floats down and touches that pond and sends it into ripples. It's messed up the pond. So you, without even thinking, bend down and try to smooth it out. Get those ruffles out and get the pond back to the glassy smoothness. But all of your attempts at smoothing it out is just making more ripples, making it worse. And then you get mad because it's not working. You get frustrated. This is the nature of what we deal with over and over and over and over. If we deal with the mental and we see that mental and we diminish that mental frustration, anger about what's happening, then we can see, oh, every time I touch the water, I'm making more ripples. I can see that and I can stop that reactivity. And then I can see that the leaf falling and touching the water is a natural cause of ripples. And that natural cause of ripples is normal. Where I think we are is in the mother of all mental understanding with becoming. It's sort of like this is the belly of the beast. In this becoming, we are now in the mental aspect of movement, comma, all of it. It starts moving in this place of becoming. So another way you can think about it is in Ajahn Chah's, you know, his famous little quote he gave. He said, there are two kinds of suffering. The suffering that leads to more suffering and the suffering that leads to the end of suffering. If you're not willing to face the second kind of suffering, the suffering that leads to the end of suffering, you will surely continue to experience the first. I think the suffering that leads to the end of suffering is that craving, that felt sense of wanting it to be different. The wanting energy, the insatiable thirst, the feeling of that discomfort is the suffering that leads to the end of suffering. And the suffering that leads to continued suffering is the mental aspect of becoming. We get so caught in the becoming that we do not feel it anymore. We're actually in our mental mind grumbling about what's happening. Mental mind preparing us, setting it out. That's what I think this becoming is really pointing to. Because it isn't really the unpleasantness that causes us so much grief. You know, we have all, as practitioners, sat with an itch. We have sat with discomfort in many, many sits. And as long as we're practicing with mindfulness and we know we're meditating, our ability to and resilience in dealing with unpleasantness gets stronger and stronger and stronger. But somehow if we let our minds loose, if we get careless, mindfulness slips, then this natural habitual tendency towards becoming, towards what are we going to talk about? What becoming is? That is where we have the most amount of suffering. And I think what I'm pointing to is what it's called. It's called, the asavas, the floods. And I want to share a quote from Ajahn Suchito, he explains this in a way that I think he just explains it so beautifully. So this is what he calls the floods. He said, our experience is a meeting and merging of internal and external currents of events. So there's an external currents of events that's coming. Something's happening, and there's an internal current event. We meet that. The awareness of something out there triggers a moment of recognition as to what the thing is, a piece of music, an old friend, a familiar flavor, along with a degree of interest, pleasure, or alarm that may act as further triggers into action. So the action he's talking about is to draw closer, to start talking, or to search one's memory for further information about that thing. This internal experience normally occupies our attention, sometimes to the point of congestion, as our minds add a swelling amount of internal activity to an ongoing flow of external data. The experience of overload can develop into one of exhaustion or pressure in our lives that diminishes peace and joy and incline the mind to either the temporary obliteration offered by a drink or drugs and entertainment, or the need for therapy to find some way to manage our daily routine. This is the loss of balance that we can rightly experience as being flooded. It isn't the world per se, nor is it that we are chronically unbalanced. It's just that the right relationship hasn't been struck. So what I think he's saying is that in the craving, there's a tension that happens. And if we are not willing to stay with that tension, then we move into clinging something that the mind has created out there, a recognition of, oh, it's going to be better if this happens or that happens. Just this idea, the mind is always looking for something better. So we create this better. What I think of becoming is the transition that gets us to that delusion. It's like the car that drives us from that. It's going to take us away, whisk us away from this unpleasantness into what the mind now has created as this world, new world, much better. This is what I think of as the nature of becoming. It's called bhava. That's what it's called in Pali. It's not a physical being. We're not becoming a physical being. It's more that we are transported mentally into a new world. And not only do we transport into this new world, but all of our thinking realigns itself as if the new world is now true. So, if I take my addiction to Tate cookies, I shouldn't even use that word. I love them so much. Even the word gets me thinking about them. I'm already tasting the crunchiness. I'm already in it. This is what it does. So, because we live in our minds primarily, I have a desire, a craving, an unpleasantness, wish I had Tate's. Just came from some thought. I saw the package. I smelt something and reminded me of Tate's something. There's that craving. So now I have this internal experience there's the imagery or the external world that I could have taste, and this clinging, wanting it. I'm convinced the mind can convince me that these tastes are going to make things better. Becoming is when I go, I get that taste, and I begin to eat it. And in that moment, it does make everything better. This is why we get so stuck in it. Because in that becoming, what the world, what the mind has created is true. I can eat that Tate cookie and one cookie and the whole world is better. It's the truth of it. It's like the becoming is the engine that drives me into the delusion that the mind has created in that world. And the entire world becomes what it is that I think that it is. Because it does get better. I do feel great. I mean, I cannot eat those cookies without feeling great. That is not the problem. I have no doubt that I'm going to feel in heaven the minute I take the first bite. The mind is now happy. The world is right. And I will not stop eating those cookies. Not at all. I will not stop until they're all gone. Because once I start, the whole, I cannot begin to separate my full-on addiction to it from letting go. It's like I get swept away in a flood and the currents are so strong, I'm swept away in it. To get that feeling of movement, this is what happens. The mind is swept away into its belief and creation of the world that it has convinced us is better. The external world is better than where it is right now. Because right now, I'm feeling the craving and the wishing it wasn't like this and the tension. Think of it like this. I hate watching sports. I hate it. Can't do it. And the reason why I can't do it is because I hate not knowing who's going to win. Right? I don't like that feeling of who's going to win. It's this. It's that. Who's going to win? And the tension can get thick in some of these games. I can't even watch it. Just call me when it's all over. And then I'm like, oh, who won? That's the only thing I'm really ever connected to. And you got to be able to be in that tension of who's going to win in order to watch a game. But the tension itself can get very difficult. And before you know it, you're actually imagining this play, then this play, then this play, then this play, then who wins? I mean, you've already started imagining how this is going to unfold in the last 2 minutes because you can't stay with the tension of what's going to happen. And so there's this rush into believing this is going to happen. I think this is why we get so discouraged when the team loses, is because we've put the win in front of us. This is going to happen. It's going to win. We're going to pull it out. And then when reality catches up to it, it catches us off guard. This is the brilliance of what the kind of mind we have in becoming. So not only is there this ability for the thinking mind to actually transition. And we get swept away in the flood. So it can not only move us, it can move us like in the floods, but it is also a transition. So what's his name? Venerable Anaglio one time told us that comma, act like a fire, that like a big forest fire. And so he says, how do you think that fire in a big forest where trees are not even touching each other, how does a fire consume the entire forest? It should just burn up one tree and then it's done, and burn up the next tree and then it's done. But how does it get from one tree to the next tree and it's carried by the wind? So fire is actually carried by wind and jumps one tree to one tree to one house to one house, and it just keeps being carried by wind. Suffering, I think, is carried by becoming. It's carried from our habit thinking into reality by this becoming. This way in which the mind can project in front, and we then go to meet it. It pushes us to go where it has projected. This is what we're trying to see when we're practicing dependent origination. Can you see how the mind is pushing you to go into what it has projected as the relief or the solution to our current craving discomfort? It's telling us this is our relief, and that's what it's doing. It's pushing us into wanting to become and get that, because we get convinced through this clinging that it's going to work. I think the convincingness of clinging, we can still move back into craving. We can still kind of like, well, let me rest back in this discomfort. But I think once we get caught on that current of becoming, we start moving into the becoming, I don't think we can go back. I don't know if that's true. I'm going to ask Philip and let you know next week. But I don't think once we get into becoming, we can go back into craving. I think we complete the cycle and we wait till it comes back around again. That's what I think happens. So it's like I complete whatever it is, and I'm going to have to face, let's say I, I'm just using my Tates because that's happens to be what's on my mind right now constantly. I shouldn't have thought about that Tate, and then now it's always going to be on my mind. But anyway, once I get the Tates, I think I'm going to eat them. There's no way I'm going to not eat them. But I do think there's something we can do in becoming, but I think the becoming has already happened. And it will always happen until I come back around to the craving of Tate and I do not give into it. That craving of Tate and I do not give into it diminishes that craving. And that is the suffering that leads to the end of suffering. Being willing to be with that wanting and not follow it. Wanting, not follow it. Wanting, not follow it. But if I follow it, I go get the Tates, I'm in the becoming, I don't think I can unring that bell. It's already rung. What I do think, and what some of the things that both Ajahn Suchito said and Venerable Analio said, that what you can do is diminish the intensity of becoming. And so I could begin to diminish how many cookies I eat before I get the realization that this is not okay. I haven't got to the diminishing yet. I'm just, you know, safe of honesty. I just still can't go buy the thing. But if I did buy them, I'm eating them all. I haven't, maybe I could let go of one, maybe. But I'm pretty much eating all 14 of those cookies. So it's like,
in one sit.
So instead, but we can practice with, if we've, we recognize that we've already succumbed to our habit, is diminishing the intensity. So this is the second part I want to talk about. What we're doing when we become, this is, we're going to talk about this, and then most of the ways we can practice what we're going to talk about next week. But this is sort of the last thing I want to talk about. And this has to do with our ability to diminish the intensity of craving, I mean, becoming. Because I don't, you could say theoretically, I could have the bag of Tates and I could eat a cookie or two and I could begin to diminish my, the flooding of it. That's probably a better way to think about it. The flooding, I'm hoping you can get a sense of that. The becoming is one of the floods, meaning that you're so wrapped up in it. You're moving towards it. You're drawing close. You're pulling away. You're in the movement of creating this world the way the mind has now convinced you it is. This better world that you're moving towards. There's a way in which you could diminish the impact of that. And that comes from how much we're feeding this new image, this futuristic thought that the mind has created. So remember when Suchita was talking about how this becoming is sort of like this internal currents and these external currents, and they meet each other, and then we begin to move into that. The mind begins to spin around, telling us what to do, how to be, what's the best way to handle this, and we begin to move into that action. What gets fed in all of that information? Let me see what he said. He says in this, this internal experience normally occupies our attention, sometimes to the point of congestion as our minds add swelling amount of internal activity to the ongoing flow of external data. What I think that is, that we're going to talk more deeply about it next week, but what I think that is a sutta that the Buddha one time talked about, where he called, he was talking about the nutrients that we feed the mental mind with. We feed the mind. And we feed the mind with what he said, where there is passion, delight, and craving for any one of these four nutrients, then that is where consciousness lands, and that is where our intensity increases. Basically, what those four nutrients are is food, contact, intention, and sense consciousness. Let me see if I can put this and say it so that it sounds like a little convoluted here, but I'll see if I can say it. Right now, I don't have any Tates. I hope the Tates example works, but I hope you understand it, even in all kinds of situations. But right now, I don't have any. So there's just a craving of wanting it because it's not here. We have the kind of mind that can project a future image that if I had the Tates, I wouldn't feel so bad. So the present moment, and the mind can project a future image. If I had the Tates, I wouldn't feel so bad. This present moment, if I stay with the hunger of it, then I can begin to uncover what's actually, I can uncover this suffering into a way where it leads to more liberation. And the tapes won't actually be it won't be a problem for me. It actually adds more liberation. But I don't really want to work with tapes. I don't really want to work with that. I don't want to practice with that. It's either get the tapes or don't get them at all. I don't want to practice with that discomfort because I want them so much. So instead, I just don't even buy them. I don't even look at them. I don't even go around. Because if I get around them, what happens is my level of passion, my level of delight and craving in it gets so overwhelming that I can't say no, is basically the bottom line. I can't say no. And this is what happens to us. We get so overwhelmed, so passionate, so caught up in the image that this is going to be so delicious, that that is what carries me. Like the wind carries fire, it carries me into becoming. And my ability to practice with it is no more. It's pretty much, when I first started thinking about how I would talk about this in becoming, it's a major bummer, I think, for lay practitioners. Because the things that give us the passion, delight, and craving are things that we like and things that we don't like. And so there's a way in which I think working, even practicing with this sense of how do I always have to be in the craving of Tate's cookies in order to practice? And in order to get liberated, do I always have to have the Tate's on my mind and somehow stay with the wanting of it? And I don't think that's what lay practitioners are being asked. I think it's what Ajahn Suchicha says, this idea that we need the right relationship to be struck. That's what we're looking for in this whole practice. We're looking for the right relationship with this pulling us into experience, this pulling us into this futuristic thinking. For me, the right relationship with Tate, I don't buy them. I don't have anything to do with them. I don't even look at them. Somebody sent me a box of Tate's from the factory. It's cruel. When I first saw that box in the entryway of my building, I thought, oh man, somebody's so lucky. They got the Tate's. But you know, that's somebody else's box. I'm not going to steal their stuff. Then my son brought the box into the house and I realized they were mine. Who would do this? So I opened up the box. I was so happy. I was overwhelmed. I thought, oh, I shouldn't eat them. I'm like, I'm just going to eat one. And the way the Tates are made is there are 14 cookies in this bag. They sent me 3 bags, 14 cookies in each bag. They have a little cellophane container that has 7 cookies in one. No, there's 14 cookies in one cellophane container and 14 in the other. So there's really 28 cookies. But the serving size is only 2. I don't know how they could do this. So I picked out 2 cookies. That didn't last at all. I ate the whole cellophane thing, all 14. Right after I opened it, I tried to let it go. I'm like, okay, Tori, we're going to practice with this. We're going to practice with this. The becoming, I'm hoping you can see, is not that I become a person. It's the mental becoming of what the mind has said I'm going to feel like if I eat these cookies. That's what you're becoming. So I eat the first little cellophane thing. I'm not going to eat anymore. But by the evening, I eat the second one. I got so distraught. I'm like, I just cannot. I said, I should give these to someone else because I can't do it. But I realized in the morning when I started thinking about eating one more cookie, that if I kept them in the house, even to give them to somebody else, they would never get to that other person unless they were there, right there, taking them. So I took all the cellophane wrappers off. I took all the cookies out and I crumbled them all up and I threw them away in the compost. I mean, that's the only right relationship I could have with it. It's looking for a right relationship. But the only way we can look for a right relationship is we have to see how much we are believing what the mind has projected out in front of us. This is what the becoming is. The becoming is the mental cosmos, the mental understanding that we are trying to move ourselves into. And the only way I could eliminate that in right relationship is we can't have any Tates in the house. I could not even have the box that read Tates on it because I might go to the store and get some. This is how bad it is. But I'm telling you this about these cookies because I'm trying to not tell you how this is in our normal life. Because it's not just about the cookies. We believe what the mind projects in front of us as if what the mind is projecting is true. And that projection is generally somehow trying to either get control, fix, or get rid of some discomfort we have right now. This is how we move in the world. Discomfort, mind projects a better world, we move towards that. Discomfort, mind projects a better world, we move towards that. And we just keep moving through life in this habitual way, trying to get to some better world. And the difficulty is that this spinning cycle that we're moving in constantly moving towards. It's all delusion. It's not even the real world. We're in the real world. We have access to it when we're in that discomfort. But we have a very savvy mind that will project a world out in front of us, and we move towards that. It will convince us, oh, if we do this, this will go away. Oh, so we move towards that. That's what this becoming is. The not becoming is something exists and we don't want it. So the mind says, oh, if you didn't have it, it would be like this. So we move towards that. This is what we do all day long. This is how we move. This is how we get up in the morning. This is how we walk through the life. This is how we die. Just this constant moving toward. It's what I think Semeda was talking about. We are dry hay chasing after the torch. We are cows chasing after the axe. We don't think of it that way because the mind has convinced us that what's out there that we're coming into is better. She says we're soft flesh chasing the cobra's fangs and lovers chasing our own reflections. We're walking food. The vultures circle. We lie down and the feast begins. This is how blunt it is. But as lay practitioners, we may not be willing to come to the edge of letting go all sense desires. We may not be at that. We're not at that place to be able to do that. I'm not at the place to be able to kind of work with this whole Tates thing. I got enough defilements and things to work on. I don't need to work on the Tates. That is easily dealt with. Don't buy them. Don't be sending me no Tates for my birthday either. Don't send them to me for Christmas. Don't send them to me at all. Say, when you think about Tate, say, oh no, we can't send that to Tuareg. That would be cruel and unusual punishment. So we're going to talk next week about practice, but what we are trying to see in this area of becoming is how the projected energy around us is pulling us into all these new worlds, all the cosmos, all our lives. Is very little of it is reality. Mostly we're being pulled into the mind's delusion, into the next, into the next, into the next. So I want to leave you with a sutta. I want to read a sutta. I just stumbled upon this when I was looking for something about the asavas, and I stumbled upon this. And I thought, oh, this is going to be great. This is what we're going to talk about next week. But you got to contemplate this for a little bit, because it takes some contemplating when you hear it. It takes some contemplation. In fact, the translator, Tanasaro Bhikkhu, he suggests that you read some other suttas before you read this one so you can understand it better. That's what his suggestion is. He says, to give the paradox some content. He goes, the commentary informs us that the Buddha teaches this deva in terms of the paradox in order to subdue her pride. To give this paradox some content, you might want to read other passages from the canon that discuss right efforts. Like, you might want to read some other stuff before tackling this. But we are going to read it, and we are going to look at it more deeply. I'll look up some right efforts kinds of things to see. But this is what, this is the sutta. It's short, so. So it starts as usual with, I have heard on one occasion the Buddha was staying near Swavati in Jetta's Grove. Then a certain deva in the far extreme of the night, her extreme radiance lighting up the entirety of Jetta's Grove, went to the Buddha. On arrival, having bowed down to him, she stood to one side, and as she was standing there, she said to him, tell me, dear sir, how you crossed over the flood. Here's what Buddha said. I crossed over the flood without pushing forward, without staying in place. And she said, but how, dear sir, did you cross over the flood without pushing forward, without staying in place? And the Buddha said, when I pushed forward, I was whirled about. When I stayed in place, I sank. And so I crossed over the flood without pushing forward, without staying in place. That's what I want you to consider. I want you to consider, just contemplate this. You're not looking for an answer. You're not looking for an answer. You're looking for a felt experience. What do you think the Buddha is pointing to when we're not pushing forward and we're not staying in place? What do you think he's pointing to? But this is the flood, this flood of becoming. In order to cross over that flood, I think this is an understanding that we have to begin to see. There's a way in which we can cross over the flood without pushing forward, which is the pushing forward towards becoming. Or staying in place, wallowing in our mental papancha. There's something connected to awakening in this. And that's what we're going to talk about.
That's what we're going to talk about next week. So let's sit quietly for a moment. Thank you for your kind attention. I'll see if there's any questions or comments. I hope it made sense. It wasn't too convoluted. Yeah, Ellen. Oh, let me make sure you can unmute yourself. There you go. Still can't do it? Oh, I thought I checked it.
There we go.
There you go.
Awesome. Yeah, so I've been, things to
worry. I can't hear you, though.
Oh, you can't hear me?
Can everybody else hear him? Oh, must be something wrong with my thing then. Let me see. Oh, yeah, I can see what it is. I'm on. I got my sound turned down. Go ahead.
Okay. Can you hear me now, Terry?
I can.
Awesome. So I've been working with this renunciation and staying with the tension, renunciating the judging mind, comparing mind, fixing mind at work. And man, Terry, I do not like the tension. I do not like the tension so much that, you know, going into that becoming is just like, okay, bring me the cookies, bring me the phone.
I know.
I don't like that. It's just like, it seems once the tension builds, it's all the, it's like a popcorn, like things going off. Like my mind's just, and offering all these possibilities, like, oh, it's saying like, oh man, this tension is so bad. Here's like 10 things you can do to just go off and get rid of this tension.
That's right. I know. But I think this is what the sutta's pointing to, though, because you don't have to wallow in the tension. That's the staying still. Mm. And you don't have to push forward. The practice is learning how to cross that flood you're talking about, because what you're talking about is the exact thing that is the flood. It's overwhelming. It comes. It's really trying to convince us and sweep us in. We do not have to push forward into this, whatever the mind is saying, go get this and it's going to be okay. Come on now. Come on. We don't have to do that. And we don't have to spin around in this tension. Mm. There is another way to be with craving that does not lock us into this, what you're saying. And one of it is right relationship. One of what Suchito is pointing to is right relationship. So let's say that this tension is beginning to swell. You know, move towards something, but pay attention to what's happening. It's like what gave me the ability to ball up the rest of the cookies was not like I wanted to. I was damn near crying. I was like feeling miserable. But because I could see the danger of leaving them in the house, that is what got me to ball them up. Not some kind of, I don't feel bad. I feel bad, I assure you. I tried to convince myself as I was balling them up to save out a couple. If I save out two, I'm only going to eat two. I didn't. I balled them all up. So I think this
this practice that we're doing requires that we have a right relationship with this. Not, it's not about just creating a level of misery that you stay in that. But can you be aware when you're shifting and moving and what you're deciding to do? We are lay practitioners, so we do not live in a world that is contained and structured for practice. Instead, we live in a world that is contained and structured for attachment and craving and wanting and desire. We're not secluded. So you will have to build in a balanced relationship with how to do this. But you described the whole talk in one little example right there. That's exactly what it is. This is what our minds do. It's made to do this. It's not even you. Our minds are made to do this. And any one of us in any situation where we decide to not follow the craving, this is what we're going to go through. And this is the difficulty that that Suchito is saying, we need a right relationship. We don't need a absolute renunciation. We don't need to beat ourselves up about not renunciating and giving into it. We just need a right relationship, which is why I told you guys I ate one bag in one night. That kind of helped me get to an understanding. But you see what I'm saying? So your renunciation, you're still renunciating, even if you give yourself a window of feeling the tension to learn a little bit and then learn a little bit more as you give in a little bit. Give in a little bit. Stay with that felt sense experience of giving in. What happens then? And then notice when the mind comes right back wanting it again. So you can begin to notice the whole process. It's not just in the renunciation. You see that? And you can build a right relationship. Not staying still and not pushing forward. Somehow in there, there is a moving towards a crossing the floods.
Thanks, Tori. Good. So for practice, like, stick with it, stick with it, stick with it. It's too much. Just observe.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
So somebody asked a question, Brooke asked, what's the difference between selfing and becoming? Can you self and not become, or become and not self? I think I'm not sure, Brooke, you may have to help me with this, but I get the impression that the becoming you're talking about is the self that comes into being. And I've always looked at becoming as some kind of a self, but everything I read is like, no, this becoming is not the self personality. It's the mental that we're talking about. So the process of dependent origination, the whole cycle is selfing. From ignorance all the way through to this aging and death. The ending of something and the starting all over again. That is selfing. But the becoming is one aspect of the selfing. It is the mental movement that creates this whole world that we, sort of like what Alan was describing so beautiful, it is convincing that this is the world we live in. This is the world we want to be in. And all we have to do is move towards this and we'll be in this better world. And that's what it is that we are convinced of.
Great. Thank you. That helps. Thank you.
Yeah. That's what I think it is. So you can't not self on the path of dependent origination. You are selfing in this entire year. Everything that we're doing is an aspect of building a self. The becoming part is what you could say is the mental projection that we physically set in motion the karma to actually make this self happen, I guess you could say. But I guess my only hesitation in saying that selfing and becoming are the same, I'm going to look it up a little bit more. I just couldn't find anything that I really liked about it. I'm going to look it up a little bit more because we usually talk about becoming in relation to selfing. But the reason why I was having a problem with it is because it's mental. And so in some respects, I want to check and just double check with Philip to make sure I'm not saying something wrong. I think the whole process is selfing. And this is more, you could say, the movement into self. You could say it like that. The mental actual movement into a sense of self. But ignorance is also a building block of that sense of self. And you don't get to becoming without clinging. And you don't get to clinging without craving. And you don't get to craving without the feeling tones. And all of that links all the way back around. All of that is necessary because it's all co-arising in the moment. Yeah, Jean.
So does becoming also include all the proliferation around things we don't want to have in our future, we don't want to create?
Mm-hmm.
Because yeah. It feels like I've put a lot of energy into, avoiding, or like all the possibilities around this election is exhausting, and it's sort of both, well, I want it to be this way, but this could happen. And so it's like, solidifying the negative aspects as well. Is that also?
Yes. It's all the same thing. The way I like to think about it is there is a current reality that for some reason the mind does not like it, either because it doesn't like what's here or because it thinks there's something better out there. But it does not like the current reality, and becoming is the projection of a better reality. And I think that craving is the current reality. The mind doesn't like it. The clinging is the projection of a better reality out there that we're clinging to. And becoming is the movement towards it. That's what I think this is. There's this.
So that was not include a reality that's less than, what if it's worse? But I'm like obsessing over it.
Yes, but you're obsessing over the reality that's created in the future, and you're moving towards it. You're moving towards it, even if you're moving towards it because you don't want it, you don't want it, you don't want it. But you think it's going to happen, you think it's going to happen, you think it's going to happen. So you're still moving towards it. You're still feeding that reality with passion and delight and clinging.
Okay.
That's what it is. That's why it feels like we would be pulling away from it. I guess you could say it like that. You're still moving in relation to the world that the mind has created, as if that world is true. But it's not true. Like, we don't know what's going to happen in this election. We don't have a clue.
Right.
But we all sit around and think about it like we do. And that's probably why the news is, I don't even watch it anymore. It's driving me crazy. I've had about as much as I can talk about it. I can't talk about it anymore.
Yeah,
we just have to wait. There's no other choice. We have to wait.
Yeah. Okay.
And so this obsessing is actually the mind's ability to create a world that's completely and wholeheartedly made up. This is what we got to get. It's all made up. But we start acting as if that world is somehow telling us something and we move towards it with fear. Here's what I'm going to try to tell you. This is not going to sound wise at all, but I'm going to say it anyway. To be afraid about an election that the mind is making up as it's going does not make any sense, because there's nothing, you don't have any context in the fear. The fear is based on a projection that is made up wholeheartedly in the mind. But we think, no, it could happen. This could happen. This could happen. This could happen. This could happen. And that's real. No, even this could happen. This could happen. This could happen. It's all made up. So to have the fear does not make any sense. It's, this is the nature of the mind we live with. So we have to balance. I'm not saying I don't have fear, because don't get me wrong, I got fear too. But I constantly pull myself back and say, Tawari, this is made up. We don't know what's going to happen. We got to just stay in the present moment with the tension of unknown and wait it out. No amount of projection is going to get us there quicker. And none of that projection is based in any kind of reality. It's just based in extrapolation. That's it. And so what I'm pointing to is the fear is our way of not dealing with the tension of the unknown. And the more we can come back and just let ourselves feel that tension of the unknown, we don't know how the game's going to end. We don't know. It's tense. As long as we can keep coming back and saying, we don't know, we don't know, we don't know, we don't know, we don't know. Do what you can, but we don't know, we don't know, we don't know. That is reality. That's what the world we're living in. We do what we can, but we don't know. Fear is not necessary. In fact, I would dare say the more fear we have, the less doing we're going to do, because we'll be trapped in the fear. Okay, you guys. So, couple of things. One, I got a great response to the whole fear around the election. I don't know if you guys seen the little email that went out about 10% happier, but 10% happier. If you check your, if you're subscribed to Sims, you should have got an email that has the links on this. 10% happier is doing this unbelievable thing. I've never been on 10% happier, but I actually got invited to talk on Mudita because I am the Mudita queen. And so they decided to do, once a week, one of the Brahma Viharas, and Joanna Hardy, who I think is Miss Metta, she did a huge podcast on loving kindness that's very beautiful. It's very nice between her and Dan Harris. And then Reverend Angel is going to be the person to talk about compassion. And I don't know anybody else that I would want to hear from about compassion, because she does not talk about it in a wimpy way. She is like warrior compassion here. And then I'm doing Mudita, and Roshi Joan Halifax is doing equanimity, which seems perfect. So they picked these four women to talk about the four Brahma Viharas each week coming up to the election. And you can follow it. And then you can, they have a challenge the week before that has all these different days of meditations that you do leading up to the election. It's quite beautiful. So I'm letting you know, if you, it's a, you can just go to wherever you get your podcast and look up 10% happier, and you can find the election series, or you can follow the link that they gave us. Either way. And then one more thing, and then we're leaving. I promise. Carol Wilson, who has never been to Sims before, is coming to do a non-residential. I really wish you were here in person. She's one of the first teachers that taught me about jhanas. She helped me get into jhanas and helped me understand it during a long retreat one time. And she's just an excellent teacher. We are so fortunate to have her because she is a senior teacher. She's coming to Sims for a weekend non-residential, the weekend of the 23rd, the 24th, and the 25th. And, you know, when Rodney was here, we used to have all these great teachers come, but, you know, it's harder to get these teachers to come to Sims, because usually they did it for Rodney. So we have this opportunity to come hear Carol Wilson. And if you've never done a weekend retreat, it is not difficult. You're going to do it from home on Zoom. Actually, it is a way to help you see how beautiful the practice can be in your own home. It really is completely doable, and it really is supportive for your overall practice. The only thing is, it used to be Sims was notorious for everybody just showing up on Friday night and figuring out what they want to do then. But it's not really like that now on these weekend retreats. And we do need you to actually register so that you can get a link so that you can be able to go. And so I just want to encourage people to register and go and hear Carol, because I think it'll be well worth your attending. I don't know how often, how long she'll teach or what opportunities we'll have to be able to hear her, but I do think her wisdom is well worth spending some time with over the weekend. So if you haven't signed up, I think that's something you should really think about doing. All righty. That's all I have. Do remember the Donna for Sims, because we are struggling and we do need support and continued help. Donna for teachers like me and Tim, just living in abundance, living in generosity. Not how much, but just this constant relationship with there is enough here. There is enough. There is enough. There is enough. So that the heart won't feel too overwhelmed. All right. And I'll see you next week. We'll talk about that sutta. Thank you so much for your practice. Have a good week.